Okay, good morning and good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the March 2nd, 2010 Wikibon Peer Insight Research Meeting, where peers discuss challenging problems in the data center, and I'm your host and moderator, Dave Vellante. The topic for today is how virtualization and cloud computing are changing business continuity and disaster recovery. And we're very excited for this call to be collaborating with the Disaster Recovery Journal. As most of you know, DRJ is the top business continuity publication in the world and has a great reputation in the industry for providing very in-depth knowledge to IT and business practitioners in this area. And I want to thank Bob Arnold, the president of DRJ, for helping us organize this discussion today. And it was through Bob's efforts that we have two very special guests on the call, both active participants in the DRJ community. The first is Michelle Turner, who was a DRJ Editorial Advisory Board member and Senior Manager of IT Risk Management and IT Governance at Microsoft Corporation. And Michelle has more than 16 years' experience in business continuity and risk management. And we're also joined by Randy Till, who's an Executive Council member on DRJ's Advisory Board and currently Vice President of Global Business Continuity Management for MasterCard International. Randy's been implementing business continuity programs within several organizations over an 18-year career. So Michelle and Randy and Bob, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just as a little bit of a disclaimer, we're going to talk today two things. One is that Michelle and Randy are not technical practitioners. They're business continuity and risk management practitioners. So they're not going to go deep into the technology, although as many of you know, sometimes these discussions can go in that direction, and if there's somebody on the call who can address those issues, then we're happy to entertain those conversations. The other point that I wanted to make is that we're going to talk today and draw upon Michelle and Randy's experience in disaster recovery and business continuity. We're not going to talk necessarily specifically about what's going on at Microsoft and MasterCard, so we're going to have a generalized discussion about that. So they're points today and opinions don't necessarily reflect those of their employer. So just some quick housekeeping that I'd like to get out of the way. If you're not speaking on the call, please mute your line. If your phone doesn't have a mute button, you can hit *6 to mute and *6 to unmute if you want to participate. And everybody's welcome to participate and encouraged to do so. The call is being recorded and will last 1 hour. And for those of you on Twitter, please use the #WikibonDRJ hashtag, so it will auto feed to social media outlets. So again, welcome Michelle and Randy. It's a pleasure to have you here today. Michelle, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure. So as mentioned in the information up front, and thank you for that, I've been in the industry for a little over 16 plus years. The focus has been around business continuity and risk management, both enterprise risk management as well as operational risk management. I've also been a member or actually the chair of the Disaster Recovery Institute, their strategic alliance organization, where they would reach out and ensure that they had the appropriate partnerships to be able to continue to drive thought leadership and such within the industry. I manage and drive the IT governance and the IT risk framework here at Microsoft, but I'm just really excited to be a part of this discussion, really feel that it's a privilege that Bob reached out to have this conversation. I've been with DRJ for a number of years, either on serving on the editorial advisory board or leading some of the focus groups from a generally accepted practices perspective. So I'm just excited to be here and hope that this will provide a lot of good information for the team out there in terms of business continuity and some risks associated with cloud computing and virtualization.
Excellent. Okay, Randy, anything you'd like to add to my brief introduction about your experience and activities in these areas?
Sure. I'll provide some background. I've been doing business continuity planning for a little over 20 years. I've started business continuity programs at several large organizations. Early years, most of it was always focused on disaster recovery planning, putting plans and facilities together for recovery of systems. Over the years, that responsibility has grown to take the overall program. I also do the business continuity or the business recovery portion. I also do the emergency management piece of the organization, and I'm also responsible for program governance. I still have responsibility for the DR side of the house. So I once again, I would like to thank for the opportunity to participate in this. I think this is an exciting time. There's a lot of new technology that's pushing the envelope. And I think this discussion should be exciting and very interesting. So once again, thank you.
You're welcome, and thanks again for Michelle and Randy for coming on. So let's get into it. So Randy, let's start with you. So virtualization is driving efficiencies and increased utilization, and in a lot of ways is improving overall organizational agility because, for example, you can deploy servers more quickly as a common example. But virtualization doesn't necessarily have the same effect for disaster recovery and business continuity, does it?
Well, I think the topic's still out on that, and we're looking at that as we transition, and virtualization's been going on for some years now. So we're seeing, and when we step back and look at it, you know, the old paradigm of having a system that's considered essential or a tier one system, and then putting recovery equipment in place at another location and having that system sit idly is not the best utilization of resources. So from a company's point of view, there's a lot of value in looking at how we can virtualize, how we can get better utilization of that equipment. I think from a DR and business continuity point of view, one of our concerns has always been that do we have sufficient capacity should a major event occur at a primary site where we have to go to the alternate site. As we start looking at virtualization, as we start to see the reduction in hardware and capacity and better utilization, one of the current concerns that comes to mind is what's that doing from an overall recovery perspective? How much do we have if we have a true event which causes us to lose a major processing site? Do we still have the capacity to support the recovery both in the immediate time and on a longer term basis?
So, Michelle, I presume, well, let me ask you, are you seeing sort of a similar trend, and is this a problem for IT? And in general, how should you think about addressing that problem?
Well, I think it depends, number one, on the needs of the organization and where you're looking to be. Relative to virtualization, it depends on sort of the strategy that you have and whether or not you're comfortable with moving away from the data center and infrastructure and what you're looking to do in terms of starting to pull down costs from a cloud computing perspective. Cloud's getting a lot of conversation right now. It's relatively new across the board, so really understanding exactly what the needs are, understanding what the potential risks are for that cloud, and really the difference between virtualization and cloud computing is something that we're still chatting through.
So maybe it's worth talking about that a little bit. Actually, before we get into that, so some of this, I guess, depends on the degree of complexity of the applications that you choose to virtualize, doesn't it? So, for example, if you're doing test and dev, it's going to be different than if you're trying to encapsulate, you know, more business-critical applications. Is that a fair comment, Michelle?
From a business-critical perspective, I think one of the things that you really have to take a hard look at is, are you comfortable with having those in more of a cloud structure? Are you comfortable from a security perspective and others? Have you taken a look at sort of what that risk list could be should those things be out in the cloud, and are you comfortable with it? From a risk perspective, I would want to make sure that I took a look at what the dependencies for these applications were. As you mentioned, the downtime, how soon would I need to have these up and running, and how is my organization dependent on these particular applications and the processes that I need to drive to? So there are all types of risk aspects that we tend to ask ourselves, and I realizing that the potential return on investment in terms of driving down the cost in a situation like this versus having things in the data center and having the actual infrastructure that needs to be built up, that's also a consideration. It just depends on where the strategy of the organization is going.
And if I could add to that, I mean, the virtualization, it's been here. and companies are looking at, and if you look at, you know, rather than having five applications that are considered essential, having five redundant systems that sit on the floor and are not being utilized, if you can get a better utilization of the hardware, that's a great move for the organization. It's a way to reduce costs. It's a way to justify your overall business continuity resiliency services. I think the one opportunity we have in our industry now is that as business continuity practitioners, we have certain information that can help this transition for the organization. So, you know, we do a lot of analysis as to what's important, what's critical, what are our recovery times. We should also have a feel for what SLAs are. So as we transition into these new environments and as we look at this, we should be able to participate with our technologists and provide valuable information and help transition how we look at disaster recovery planning. We've kind of thought about this a lot, and you know, before what we always had is we had a tiered approach to recovery. You were either tier one, tier two, tier three, or over time we've kind of evolved that from essential to deferred type of critical applications. We're now thinking about this and thinking that maybe there's a different way to look at this. Maybe there's a platinum type of availability, which has to have maybe isn't something that we virtualize. It's something that we have to look at a little differently just because of the mission criticality of it. But then there's another goal level or another service level so that we may transition how we think about our overall business services and how we go about setting up these environments and this architecture to support our business needs.
And if I can follow up on that thinking, so maybe you have this platinum level that you don't virtualize because of performance considerations, recovery, both?
Yes, and because of the potential risk. I mean, as we do virtualize, we do start putting multiple systems on the same hardware. They may not all have the same level of SLAs or the same level of recovery. It's a little safer as you're doing this if you've got something that's truly mission critical to isolate that in an environment that maybe takes less risk. So that's one thought that we have is that there are certain areas, business services that we can't do without. So those may have to be looked at a little bit differently. The other thing with some of the virtualization and as we go to cloud, we've already been doing things like live switching of systems, co-processing of systems where systems are running on within the cloud, and that a loss of one facility would not stop that processing. But as we continue to transition to this type of an environment, hopefully what we can do is we can get not only better utilization, but we can do things such as switching within the cloud to alternate sites so that we can do hardware refreshes or we can do maintenance. And what we're doing is, as part of our overall operational resiliency, we're eliminating downtime.
I want to go back to something that Michelle mentioned earlier, or maybe it was you, Randy, I can't remember now, but it was discussing the difference between virtualization and cloud. And I don't want to get into an academic discussion, but is it important for practitioners to think through differences, Michelle?
I think that it is. From a virtualization perspective, when I think of that, I really think of it, I think of the logical and the physical servers as really being separate. But as I look at cloud computing, given that cloud computing has a server piece, and then within the cloud you have the independent applications that are put into the cloud from various areas, it's more of an internet resource type area. So I think to understand exactly what that looks like and what works best for your organization is key. And again, I go back to some of the risk questions that need to be asked in terms of what would the impact be? What would the likelihood that X would occur within this environment? And then from a level of management control, what controls do you have in place to potentially mitigate some of the risks that you have there? I think those are some key questions that need to be asked, but I think really we need to apply some standard business continuity and risk management questions. Again, even though for some people these two areas are new, if we just leverage some of the questions and considerations that we have in a standard or more traditional environment to this environment, it might not be so overwhelming or as overwhelming as some people think it is.
So can we talk about some of those questions? Maybe, like, can you start us off with what some of those questions should be?
Sure. So I would be looking at typical questions to say, well, a typical risk assessment process. When you take a look at any type of situation, what are the strategies that you're looking to drive for your organization, your particular piece of the pie, and what are the objectives that you're looking to gain? So once you have a clear understanding of those strategies and those business objectives, then let's start to take a look at the risks that could potentially impact those business objectives. And those could be external risks, those could be internal risks, those could be geopolitical. But what are the key risks that would truly impact that particular strategy and business objective? And once you take a look at those risks, now start to specify exactly what that impact, the impact of that particular risk would be. So when I say impact, start to ask yourself some questions around, would it have a reputational impact? Would it have a specific customer or partner experience type impact? Start thinking of some of those particular topics, revenue impact, things of that nature, and start to rate them. Also, the likelihood that this could occur. When you think about X risk, be it a risk of, has there been a risk of stability within X environment that should be considered historically? Has there been a situation that has caused X to happen before that should be noted? So think a little bit about the likelihood that it could occur and when the last time something like this did occur, and then take a look at the level of management control. And this is the part that's really scary for a lot of people, because that means that you're really going to have to take a look and acknowledge that there are certain things that you're just not there yet in terms of where you want to be. So just ask some hard questions about the specific controls that you have in place, and not only do you have them in place, but have you tested them to prove the functionality? So those are some of the things that I think through when I go through a risk assessment that I think can also be applied to this environment as well. And there's typically about 10, when you look at the professional practices within the organization, there's about 10 that deal with, you know, general program management and crisis evaluation, dealing with critical application review and things of that nature that you can also go through and use as a checklist. But those are some of the things that I consider.
So you're advocating, I think, Michelle, a fairly straightforward model of likelihood and potential impact, and using I'll call it a scoring methodology that you can probably pretty easily communicate throughout the organization. Did I get that right?
I think that there's an opportunity to take a look to leverage what we have in the industry, some of the tools that are out there to be able to apply to this and start to grow a little bit more on this. And then the last piece of it is, how do we really measure success? What are some of the key performance indicators? What do we feel really comfortable with laying down in a scorecard to say, okay, yep, this is performing the way that I feel that it should, the way that we need for it to substantiate our environment?
And then, so Randy, I want you to weigh in here is in terms of that overall approach. Is, in your experience, is that the most effective way, or do you sometimes have to go even to a deeper level of quantification, and is that even feasible?
Well, and I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is that things are changing right now. I don't know if we know what, you know, cloud computing probably means a lot of different things to a lot of different people and organizations, but I think it's been really important for us as risk managers, business continuity planners, to be engaged in this in the early stages, as this architecture, as these new technologies roll out within our organization. Right now, technology is ahead of the business. And, you know, we're seeing technology, we're seeing vendors out there that are promoting all kind of services, technologies. You know, quite often I'm hearing now that as we move to virtualization, cloud computing, that, you know, the concept of DR as we have practiced it in the past will be gone. It will be eliminated, and it will just be part of the overall operational management of the organization. And maybe down the road, that is something where we get much closer to. I don't think we'll ever have a situation where companies can afford to have everything fully redundant and that the cloud can never fail. But let's hope maybe someday we're there. But as we do this, I think as we transition, a lot of what Michelle's talking about is we've had practices in place which are going to have to be adjusted. They're going to have to be changed for the new technology. But as businesses catch up, we can play that role of evaluating risk so that technology doesn't run away on us, evaluating risk, assessing risk, and determining what the impacts are to the business. And hopefully we're players in this overall transition. You know, as we move to these new technologies, and we've already seen, you know, virtualization, I can see, you know, I had 4 servers 2 years ago, and now I have 1 server, and I didn't see that happen. You know, it was taken care of by technology, and it shouldn't matter to me as a user of DR. But as we continue to transition, a lot of what's going to have to catch up with this is going to be our applications. You know, our applications are still engineered and designed, and they don't have the flexibility to use all this technology. So there's going to have to be a transition within organizations to where systems are redesigned. And many business users, they like the idea that they have their own server and that they're in their own little safe environment. And they don't want to spend the money on what it's going to take to make their systems more resilient and take advantages of virtualization or cloud computing. So this whole transition through here, we have some practices that we've used in the past. They're going to have to change. We're going to have to adapt them for the changing business needs and technology. But once again, I think we play an important role in helping to transition what DR and business continuity looks like in the future.
Right, so your point being that in today's world of the historical computing model, you can understand that you've got your own resources and you can protect those in whatever way necessary and use physical attributes to do that, and a lot of that goes away with virtualization and cloud, right?
And maybe, you know, today the recovery plans that are 50 or 60 pages long that we go through very controlled step by step to make sure everything is switched, maybe those procedures become much more simpler. And you know, we've already seen it in certain systems and stuff. You know, recovery, and maybe as an organization, we have certain things that are mission critical or in that gold or platinum level that are just available. They're in that availability spectrum, which means that they're using the cloud and to ensure that they have no single points of failure and always available. But there's always going to be those other business applications out there that are probably still in the recovery.
So I want to come back to this notion in a minute about business continuity and DR often being sort of an afterthought, and you're talking about the possibility of making these disciplines a fundamental part of the operational culture. But before I do that, I want to open it up to folks in the audience. Are there people out there who are wrestling with these types of issues, looking at, you know, a similar constriction of resources in terms of DR and business continuity? Have other experiences of applying this and or other questions that you might have for the folks in the call today, specifically for Michelle and Randy? Let me just open it up.
Hi, this is David Floyer. I have one question or one concern would like to hear your opinion on. I'm a great reader of black swans and disasters don't come all to, just one just randomly. What's the risk on the network infrastructure from the telecom suppliers? How does that factor into this? Are we putting forward this new model, which actually has some intrinsic risks that if something big happened and a lot of people failed together, it just couldn't happen, it couldn't work?
So this is Michelle. I've learned never to say never. I think that there is a significant risk that we could be placing in that area. I think it's almost, I don't know how big the and how prepared the telecom providers are. I wonder sometimes in terms of capacity and their ability to respond in an appropriate manner, how well they're geared for this. The thing that truly excites me about cloud computing and sort of the age that we're getting into is that actually as a business continuity practitioner, I see that the skill set that we have is becoming more and more requested, if not only from an informational perspective to give some consultative support on the what is, from a deeper understanding and, hey, I really need your help in really setting this structure up strategically, I think that we're getting a lot more play there. It used to be that business continuity, like you mentioned earlier, was an afterthought. And so now I think that people are starting to ask some of the questions. They might not be dependent at this point, but they're asking some of the questions and it's actually lending a little bit more credibility, I feel, in the business continuity space. So, yeah, I do have some concerns around the telecom area, and I think that we just need to keep an eye on that and make sure that they have the appropriate processes in place relative to business continuity as well, to be able to support what we're putting out there.
And there's Randy, if I could add on to that too, and I agree from a business continuity perspective, as we're talking about this technology, we often become maybe that go-between between the technologists who are looking at this and excited about this and looking to run at this as a great savings, but we have that linkage with the business side. And we can help bring the business perspective. We've already done some of the risk assessments. We've already done the impacts, the business impacts. So we can help tie the business strategy to the new technology. But you bring a good point with the network. And even as a business continuity planner, the network's always a tough one because it's a hard one to get our hands around as practitioners. It's often that gray area out there that's difficult for us to see and understand, but that is a good question, and I think one of those areas are going to have to be analyzed from a risk perspective.
Jerry Murphy, I just want to throw in my two cents. I think one of the things happens when you add virtualization and cloud computing into these DR domains, like so many things in life, and IT is no exception. I find it's a question of a problem of squeezing a balloon. You know, it's like in fixing a problem in one domain, you create a problem in another domain, right? So by adding layers of abstraction to my infrastructure, I make it easier to, separate the dependence of the applications from the underlying, hardware and networking infrastructure that support it. So the good news is it makes things more fungible. It's easier to sort of build survivability into there, but adding that layer of abstraction also increases the overall complexity of your environment, and so what you lose, like in Schrodinger's problems, right, is it's another one of these areas where it becomes harder to pinpoint a problem when you have one, and if a resource completely fails, then it might be easy to say, hey, resource X died, all the things on top of it have died, but with all these layers of abstraction, it becomes harder and harder to pinpoint if you have a performance problem, so it's not down, it's just degraded. Where is the problem? Is it in the hypervisor? Is it network congestion? Is it the fact that I moved something from a physical server to a virtual server and something missing a driver in a DLL of the hypervisor, on this new piece of hardware wasn't tested as an edge case? Well, I think that's what you trade off, is you increase your flexibility and adaptability, but you also make it harder to pinpoint and resolve and optimize the performance of your infrastructure.
You know what? I like that point. And the point is really the trade-off between scalability. Yes, you can gain some in scalability, but you also have to acknowledge that from a reliability perspective, in the event that something occurs, now we've got to be able to go through and find exactly where that issue occurred. Based on scalability, maybe we've not exactly set ourselves up for success there.
And because of the end-to-one relationship of these mappings, it's going to become like a house of cards or dominoes, right? Depending on what fails, which causes something else to fail, you could have something in left field all of a sudden has a major impact on something because of this sort of recursive nested mappings of virtualization. You know, it was just too complex to analyze what those dependencies were and how that all fell out, like the big power outage that happened a few years ago.
Good point.
You know, the one thing we haven't talked about is that the new technology, it's here, it's coming, but I don't know if the governance of that technology has yet been thought out. And that's one of the things we have to worry about, is that we don't move too far, too fast, without really putting the governance around this. And I think that's part of what we're talking about here, is that as we go down here and we start integrating multiple systems under one platform, we do have a house of cards that could fall down. And that, you know, that worries me, because it's one thing that we can engineer a particular application, and if that application fails, we know that we can have some type of availability that brings it back up within the cloud. But when you have a major facility or infrastructure failure, now you're recovering multiple, or you've got multiple systems that have to come together, and that, as a business continuity practitioner, becomes a little more hard to track when before you were doing it one for one. Now all of a sudden it's a little grayer when you're trying to look at that.
And his last comment I'll make, and I'll shut up, but what you find happens, oh man, I had a really good point I was going to make. No,
it sounded like it was really going to be profound.
I know, I'm dying to hear it, Jerry.
Management becomes really important, right? Because what we have is we have really good tools that understand the business application, and I can look at those business objects and methods and all that stuff. I can do that. I also have really good element management tools. I can monitor my network, look at my server disk space utilization, all the physical resource stuff. The problem, I still think there's a big gap, and I think it's one of the big challenges as we get into all this virtualization, cloud computing, is to map. There's still a gap between a sort of application business process management and all that lower-level element management stuff. So I can, just because I know things really well in the one domain, I'm still not good at mapping a problem in one domain to the other, or vice versa.
So yeah, you're on a really good point. This is Joe. You're on a really good point that, you know, in the past what we've looked at is traditionally we've had challenges trying to reconcile or trying to connect, you know, for example, an open systems platform with a mainframe platform, and you talk about the application dependencies that ride between those two environments. Now if you think about it and you take it out one more layer and you start putting pieces of the applications or storage or compute power or network connectivity out in a cloud, do you now have another level of dependency mapping that lays on top of the true application layer mapping?
And right, you see things like OpsWare. There are things that will say, oh, here's my human resources application, which has these applications, but typically what happens is I say, oh, it sits on these physical servers.
Exactly.
But now if it's not sitting on these physical servers but virtual servers, and now I've got things like vMotion that might dynamically move them someplace else in a moment's notice, I think those tools are not quite up to speed with, you know, that stuff's all going to be dynamic, so a lot of these tools have to be sort of rebuilt to maintain their integrity when all of the mappings are no longer static.
Well, true, and if you link that back to the reason why, you know, the call here is disaster recovery business continuity, how does this impact a recovery time or a recovery point objective at time of event when you have to now not only understand all that mapping but go through the tedious process of putting this all back together in a different construct?
So you guys, Joe and Jerry, are essentially saying that the management system or management tools need to understand the language of virtualization and cloud computing, and I guess by that I mean what resources is the virtual environment consuming, and when and where and how is that trending, and am I meeting my SLAs, and if not, why not? And you're saying the traditional tools that we have are not necessarily going to be able to be applied, and as Randy was saying, we may need to re-architect the whole thing. Is that?
Well, I think it's two things. One, it's the tools, but I also think it enhances or elevates the level of discipline that you now have to put in place relative to your systems management, from problem, change, configuration, asset management, right? Because now you know, as Jerry said, you know, you now, because the more you automate, the more you allow the system to be flexible, the more you need to control, understand, and make sure you know what it is doing before you push a button and make it happen.
So this is Michelle. I just want to make a quick comment. And Randy, you opened the door when you talked governance, so I'm clear to go. But I think that's exactly what we're talking about here. When you look from a cloud computing perspective, you're looking at, you know, the metering aspects and how do you measure this and is it exactly what we need and is this going to be able to do for our customers or our clients what we want it to do. But I think you also have to make sure that you apply that governance structure to say, look, when we talk about governance, it's all about decisioning and accountability, right? Who's accountable for this and what decisions need to be made in order to drive us to success. So when you look at the major aspects of governance, you're talking strategic alignment, making sure that we truly understand what the business expects and what's doable for us and how we meet that. And then when you look at value delivery, okay, are we going to really be able to deliver on this? And how do we track that? How do we make sure that we're doing what we need to do? Do we have the resources to be able to do what we said we probably could do from a resource management perspective? And then general risk management, what rigors do we put in place to either accept, manage, mitigate? What are we really going to do with this risk? And then bottom line performance measures. How do we put those things in place to be able to say, yep, this is a scorecard of what's going on, red, yellow, green, and just because it's all green doesn't always mean it's all good. Maybe that means you don't have the right metrics in place to truly be able to figure out what really needs to get done. So I know I said that really quickly, but I'm pretty passionate on this topic. So I think we really hit something there when we were talking about governance.
So is the way that we're going to measure success going to change?
Yep.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Dave, this is John MacArthur. I'm wondering if the panelists could speak a little bit about any changes relative to the distance of that people are looking to have the recovery site located, where in the past we've had recovery sites being sort of either a rebuild site at some far distant third-party provider like a SunGuard or IBM Global, versus having a more active recovery site, say, 1,500 miles away. Can you speak to trends in that area?
You know, I think back in the day we would say typically less than 50 miles based on what we knew recovery to be. Now when you're looking at remote replication and some of the other things that are coming down the pipe and the option of virtualization, I don't know that we fully know what we can handle. At least I'm not sure that I have the data on exactly what we can handle. Randy, do you have any additional information? I know that 50 miles was always the marker that we used to put on recovery, but I think that we've just grown a lot in that time where we can really pull it together, pull it a little bit further out.
And I mean, this was a hot topic 5 years ago, 10 years ago, where people were building a lot of their alternate sites within a close proximity so that they could take advantage of technology to move data. But I, to be honest, at least in my experience, it's not really a conversation anymore. And I think technology's caught up. We can move data in a lot of places. It's going to be interesting, though, as we look at virtualization and the cloud computing, is that we may find, while organizations have went to internal recovery having redundant sites trying to back each other up, we may find that places like SunGuard and IBM now have the ability to take over and process production traffic. And we might see a move towards a lot more outsourcing along with these types of services and capabilities. So I think that's another part of the real excitement of this whole where we're going, is that, you know, the ability to provide not only a higher level of availability and resiliency for your organization. One of my thoughts is that those tier two, those next level down business services, which in the past maybe went unprotected or were at that, you know, 30 to 60 day time frame, might become within that cloud. You may have a lot more flexibility of acquiring capacity from other things in the cloud, whether it's a test environment or whatever, than what you could ever, you know, do in the past. So that might be the next transition that really helps to protect an organization.
And what about facilities? I mean, as we outsource more of our information requirements, are there things that organizations should think about regarding facilities, you know, like not having a sign on the building that says data center here? I mean, are you seeing any kind of increased pressures there, or anybody else on the call?
Yeah, David, this is Dick Fordham. I'm with a company called Recovery Point. Spent a lot of time working for IBM, disaster recovery and business continuity, and made a move to lead up their marketing and strategy last year. Perhaps I can give it this conversation a perspective from a service provider's point of view. I mean, it's a great conversation, and I applaud you for bringing it up. And I've been listening very closely to Randy and Michelle because giving lots of ideas from a service provider's point of view. I've got a couple of comments. I think when I left IBM, we just made the acquisition of Arson Digital, and that was a clear attempt at IBM BCRS establishing an early cloud-based data replication and recovery solution. We saw, you know, EMC by Mosey. We saw people like Terramark come out with services. At Recovery Point, we're looking at the same sorts of things. We believe that the old hot site model for shared assets in the 24 or 48 hour recovery is not going to be acceptable as we go into the second decade of the 21st century. And yet, many companies, especially in the SMB market, can't afford the very high-end neuron technologies. We see virtualization in the cloud in some form filling a gap between, you know, the low-end, tape-based 48-hour recovery service and the high-end, fairly unaffordable mirroring solutions that you have out there today. And a lot of this new wave of services is made possible by this new deduplication technology that's around from companies like Avamire or Asigra or those sort of people. So that's what we're looking for. That's what we're looking at doing. And, you know, I'm writing down some feedback from this call to help me understand how and when we can exploit this. The second point I'd like to make is that as a service provider, one of the things we take very seriously, and a lot of customers, I'm not sure they skip it, but one of the things we take very seriously is the integrity and the resilience of our facilities. I think you just made a very good point, Randy, in that more and more you'll see some of these Tier 2 applications perhaps being hosted by an IBM or SunGuard or Recovery Point, that kind of service provider, and therefore the facilities that those things are housed in need to be impenetrable, basically. So one of the things that we advise our customers on and prospects who come to us is that you look for a Tier 3 rating from an organisation like the Uptime Institute to ensure that you're entrusting your applications or infrastructure to a service provider that's got the highest levels of integrity in terms of the resilience of their facilities. And that's a very, very important point. And I'd like your comment on that as well.
This is Randy, and I appreciate those comments. That was right on the spot. You know, that's one of my concerns as you move towards outsourcing. Often the driving force is always the cost of something. And once again, I think business continuity needs to be in the forefront and engaged in those things, because I think we can provide a higher level of protection, whether it's recovery or resiliency, as we look at, you know, and as technology is changing, there's going to be a lot more opportunities, as you said, that maybe you allow things to be hosted outside that provide you a better overall environment at a more attractive price. But the thing, you're right, is that someone needs to be looking at this from a continuity point of view. And wherever you go, you know, do they have the same level of standards? Do they have the same level of capabilities that your organization expects? And oftentimes what we find is that's an after-the-fact assessment as opposed to an upfront as you're doing the contract and you're making the move.
Yeah, I think that's the point we're making here, and I think you've underscored it, is that, you know, many of the facilities that service providers have today were built in the 20th century. They were built to meet the needs of the customer at that time, and now, you know, if you think about it, if you're going to carry out routine maintenance upgrades on data center infrastructure, you can not do it at the expense of bringing down the customer's system. ever, never. So this kind of tier three rating approach, this kind of redundant, concurrent, maintainable infrastructure, I think is something that you're going to see more and more service providers focusing on to give their customers the level of comfort that these things will always be up.
So before I make the next comment, any other questions? I want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to comment or ask questions of our panelists today.
The only one thing I want to throw out on that, if you go to outsourcing the service provider for some of these types of things for VR, is you can set things up with data deduplication and symmetric replication to keep copies of things up, but you have to make sure you're thinking about in the initial planning, getting that initial load of what might be multi, you know, petabytes of data you initially host at the center. You're probably not going to be doing that across the network, and you're going to have to do an initial on-site hardware-to-hardware, you know, storage area network-based replication as an initial part of your process that needs to be thought of.
Yeah. And I think as we talk about all this, there are probably going to be systems and applications out there, data warehouse, things of that nature, that are probably maybe going to have to be looked at from a different perspective and maybe won't take advantages of some of the same services. So it's not everything's equal.
I have a question. What's the, this is Dennis Martin, what's the difference when you go to test your recovery plan when you're doing local VR planning versus doing it in the cloud?
I think one of the things that you need to consider is the latency potentially. One of the things from a cloud computing, we talk about agility being one of the key benefits, and that's great, but we also have to make sure that we understand from a latency perspective what we're willing to accept and if there would be latency that we need to consider, which I think in typical recovery, it was a consideration, but I think it's one thing that we have to take an even deeper look at when we look in this environment.
We may also, I mean, down the road, and we already see this with some systems that have that ability to switch and go live, is that maybe DR testing isn't a requirement anymore. Maybe if we have that ability, you know, we've always talked about, you know, where we'd like to be, is that if we had a mission-critical application, is that one day a week it runs somewhere else in the cloud. Because if we know if we can run it one day a week at somewhere else in the cloud, then we know we can run it anytime. So maybe, you know, as opposed to DR, some of our more mission-critical essential systems become operational resiliency, and it falls now back in the hands of the operations group, and you don't necessarily have DR plans or DR tests. And, you know, that type of resiliency really helps you, and I think we're years, you know, years away, but the technology is catching it, is that we may say, you know what, we've got upgrades coming in, or we've got a refresh that's going on. We're going to move it, operate this somewhere else while we do all that. We take that whole risk out of our operational area, and as a byproduct, we know that, you know, we can continue the process. So that may be where we're transitioning to.
So it feels like, I'm just going to try to draw some conclusions out of here. It feels like that if just the cloud computing and virtualization trend are in the first lap, that from a DR perspective, we're sort of really at the starting line here. Whether it's re-architecting the systems to make them a fundamental part of the operational culture, it's, you know, changing the testing procedures, and really Michelle's point about governance and the technology being ahead of maybe some of the process. And governance is a key place for practitioners to start. Is that correct? I mean, is that really where the starting point should be for people that want to get into this?
I think you do need to start with governance. I think those key points around governance have to be very, very clear, the connection with the business, understanding expectations, being realistic about what you can and can't do. And the reality is we're, you know, once we get used to X, then we're looking, well, what's the next big thing and the next big thing? So here with cloud computing, while, like I said earlier, agility, I mean, you're supposed to have that immediate reaction. Reality is maybe a year or two or whatever from now will say, wow, it's taken, what, 3 seconds to get up there? Good Lord. You know, that's super long. I mean, so I think it's just a matter of evolution, a matter of setting expectations and really understanding exactly what we need to have strategically for the organization and what really needs to be baked through.
And it may not be starting with governance, but governance over this whole process is going to have to catch up. And that's something that, from a risk perspective, we have to keep our eyes on as we move down this path.
This is John again. One of the things that I'm noting here is that we talk in some ways about how cloud computing isn't really there, but there was a client the other day who was a hospital that had suffered a data loss, and in doing so they suffered some reputational impact, and so they made a decision as a corporation, because they were relatively small, to move their critical applications to a service provider, which in my mind is sort of a cloud-based offering, right? And then that service provider, using shared resources, it was able to provide a solution that offered a zero data loss solution with better business continuity. So in some ways, I think it's there.
And I think it sounds like they took more of a risk management approach to say, look, this is what's occurred. We don't know in terms of likelihood that this could occur again, that we're really prepared for it. So in that situation, they chose to almost transfer the risk to another area in terms of insurance. You know, they wanted a little bit of insurance in terms of how they would be able to be successful the next go round. So I think that is applying a little bit more of a risk management approach to what they would need to do here.
You know, an interesting, I was talking with a client, another company, and we were talking about the business continuity program, and the perspective from that organization, from their CIO, was that where we're heading with virtualization, where we're heading with cloud computing, is going to replace their DR. And their thought at that time was they're not spending a lot more on their DR, but they think technology is going to take that over. Now, that worries me some, because I know when, you know, high availability came about, that concept got oversold to our business users, and people thought that if they had high availability that they could never go down. And, you know, we're at that point where people are out there, and you may be right. You know, we're closer than we think, and this isn't 10 or 15 years off. This is, you know, 2, 3, and in some cases it's there today. So.
Well, isn't it true that the challenge between availability and true disaster recovery, if you use, you know, 50 miles, 100 miles, whatever, the outer region philosophy, is the latency. So as soon as, you know, the latency issue is concerned, is resolved, and you can actually do high availability over great distance, then it is possible that disaster recovery as we know it morphs into more of an availability or an operational availability approach.
You're going to increase the speed of light, aren't you?
Well, that's just a minor detail, right? I mean, but you're right. You know, question on that topic. You know, as you start to look, and I guess that one of the biggest promises of virtualization and cloud computing is that you can reduce footprints and you can save money as you extend things out. Has anyone done any of the financial analysis that says, if I take things that I gain economies of scale, for example, pretty good economies of scale of taking a data center and recovering it to a reciprocal data center, regardless of how you do it. If I now take that recovery and fragment it to 3 or 4 different places, pods or whatever you call it, through virtualization or through cloud, do I potentially increase the cost of network and disaster recovery to put it back together? Has anyone done that financial analysis? Just curious.
I think that analysis is being done out there, and in fact, I think you can bring in a lot of the large vendors, and they will do that analysis for you, looking at your environment, looking at what percentage of capacities you're running some of your hardware at, what you can gain by doing some virtualization. I believe you can go to any IBM or EMC or HP or any of them, and they will do that type of analysis for you. From what I've heard is that they're pretty, at least they're pretty consistent in some of their analysis along the way. Now, whether they take the increase in networking and capacity and that into that effect, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know everyone looks at that lowering of cost from an infrastructure perspective, but there are also considerations around design and making sure that you have the appropriate design for your organization, what it really means. I think that there are other costs that you need to take a look at. But to your point, Randy, there are organizations out there that would be more than happy to come in and provide some assistance there.
David Floyer, have you ever looked at this?
Yes, I've taken some initial looks at this whole area of costing of internal and external clouds. And just objections I've got at the moment is that if you take the IT budget as a whole, then there's a potential for lowering the overall IT budget by in the order of 15%. If you take the journey, that's including everything, and on the operational side, it's obviously significantly higher than that.
One of the big advantages of this is not the hardware. The hardware is fairly inexpensive; it's a commodity. It's the software that are really, as you put more and more foot, the software companies are making a lot of money off of idle boxes. So that's where you can really make some huge savings.
We have a theory, don't we, David?
We're not quite so convinced about that. I mean, that's a short-term tactical play that might win in the short term. But my experience of software vendors is that they know the value of what they sell, and they will adjust their charging mechanism to achieve that value. So I wouldn't put that as a long-term strategy depend upon that as in my cost justification. But there's certainly the areas of operational savings are very, very important indeed. And one of the interesting things is there are some new technologies coming out which include data dispersal in them, which allow you to spread data over multiple sites. Those may be a very interesting way of addressing addressing this whole area of dispersal and actually improving availability at the same time.
Okay, excellent. Well, we have to wrap. Let's see, Michelle and or, let's start with Michelle. Any final words of wisdom or advice you'd give your fellow practitioners?
You know what, I would just continue to look at ways to leverage some of the existing business continuity and risk management practices to be able to add value to some of the conversations that are going on around cloud computing and virtualization. I think that there's a way for us to be able to integrate some of the best practices that we have versus look at things as separately as maybe some organizations have so far. So I just want to end with that message. Integration, integration, integration.
Excellent. And Randy?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you. This was a great opportunity to talk on something that is changing. It's here today. It is changing things. You know, we're business continuity practitioners. We're at a 25,000-foot level, but I know a lot of the audience here is much closer to this and is seeing the actual implementation of it. And I just hope that as we move forward down this path that there's a lot of discussion on how not only do we transition DR in the future, but how do we improve our overall availability? How does this make it an organization more resilient? So I hope there'll be a lot more of these discussions both outside of our organizations and within our organizations.
Excellent. Well, on behalf of the Wikibon community, I'd like to thank again DRJ and Bob Arnold for helping us organize this call, and of course our two guests, Michelle Turner and Randy Till. Thank you very much for coming on today. And I'd also like to thank the other Wikibon members who contributed in the call, David Floyer, Jerry Murphy, Joe, Wikibon and DRJ members, Joe, John MacArthur, Dick Fordham, and Dennis Martin. Thank you for your comments and questions. Excellent, as always. As a reminder, our next Peer Insight is scheduled for Tuesday, March 23rd, and we'll be looking at Infrastructure 2010, how IT executives plan to deliver infrastructure as a service in the coming decade. And as another reminder, over the next 24 hours, we'll have up on Wikibon 6 research notes pertaining to the call today with user actions. So look for that, and feel free to hit the edit tab and improve the pieces or put up your own pieces or even write a wiki tip. And we'll be producing a podcast of this call, and we'll be sending that out. And I believe that DRJ will also be publishing some information from this call, so please look forward for that. So thanks for listening today, everybody, and thanks for being a member of Wikibon and the DRJ. Bye for now.